Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name's Adam Alvarez. Thanks for joining us for episode 45. And Rick, it's good to be back. And also, we're coming to you, to our listeners, the day after a very important day on our calendar in Remembrance Day.
Yes, the 11th of the 11th every year, Adam. And it is an important day. And I do recall us touching on it last year in our inaugural year of podcasts. We had our service yesterday. And our principal took the school captains over to the local park, which is actually just diagonally across from our school, for the actual community service that runs every year there in Ocean Grove. And we stayed at the school for our school ceremony. And there was this moment during the our minute silence where we could hear the last post playing at the park's service. It's kind of floating in on the breeze, quite distant, but it was clear. And it was, I just had a moment. I mean, I really respect Remembrance Day and Anzac Day. They're very important to me and my dad. But it was just a great moment. It was actually better than when the last post played on our speakers at school. And I spoke to a couple of other people and they felt the same way. So kind of one of those little fortuitous moments at a service. It was just lovely.
It's almost like it was meant to be. That floating air, it meant to be at that time. And I know that those days are important to you, particularly in the sense that you go to the dawn service every year with your dad, and it's a big part of the calendar for you guys. So, and it is a big day. I don't know about you, but I actually use the lead-up days to teach the students. I really try and impart on them the importance of the day and how important it is to our history, because I think some of them don't really realise it, particularly in the 1-2s. I know that I've had a couple of blank faces when I've tried to explain it, but they've got to understand just how important this is to our history.
Well, Nigel, who we spoke to earlier in the year, the assistant principal, did mention that at our assembly, is that if you know the younger kids might not know much about it, so go back to your classroom and ask questions. And a great point, because I think the earlier the better, and I can understand why the young kids don't know. So there's so much, there is so much interest in that topic once they get into it, because it is sort of, you know, such a big part of our history.
There is, mate. So look, we have three terrific topics tonight that we'd love to get into. So, mate, let's not waste any time. Let's go.
Let's go.
So, Rick, for our first topic tonight, it must be said that November, it's almost the middle of November, reports and all those things going on, you get tighter, find it a struggle to get out of bed and get to work sometimes in the morning. We wanted to talk about actually getting to school in the morning, the times you get to school in the morning and leaving school, and what is an appropriate time to get there and what is an inappropriate time to get there. And I suppose it changes throughout the year when the energy levels are up and about, you kind of get there a bit earlier. You get bombarded. I don't know about you, mate, but the last couple of mornings for me, waking up, that alarm's gone off and I've gone, no, I almost can't face getting out of bed.
Yeah, I understand that. And I guess outside leadership, who we know have to have a myriad of other jobs, when we started our career, there was kind of that unwritten rule of maybe arriving at 8 o'clock.
Yep.
And but it wasn't until maybe, I reckon 5 or 6 years into my career that I learnt that we are paid from 8:45 to quarter to 4 on a day is actually our paid salary. So it's kind of fascinating, because all through uni and then doing our teaching practicum and that, it was kind of, I just thought, well, 8 o'clock, you arrive at 8 o'clock, an hour before the students arrive, sometimes earlier for some teachers, and that was what you had to do. And then you gradually learn that it's really up to you.
Yes.
I know some leaderships in some schools might recommend what time you should be there until. Obviously, you have meetings on after school on some days of the week. But I guess, what's your regular arrival at school, Adam?
Look, I think I aim to be there between 8 and 10 past 8. I think that's kind of blown out a little bit with the birth of my daughter. Some mornings I'll get up and she'll be up and I'll actually spend 5 or 10 minutes playing with her, and talking to my wife and doing those things, and all of a sudden I'm going, oh, hang on, I've got to get out. Like, nothing about my routine has changed. It's kind of that I can't sort of do bits and pieces. Back in the day, the wife worked early, very early morning, so I could just get up, do my stuff and go, but that's kind of changed. But I try and aim to be there between sort of that 8, 10 past 8. And I know you get up early in the morning as well, and you're generally there by 8 o'clock.
Generally, yeah. So what was your initial reasons for getting there at 8, like in terms of professionally? I mean, obviously you're entitled to spend that time with your daughter, because that is life.
Yeah, true.
In the end, as much as passionate as we can be about this job, it is a job. So what was your original intentions for arriving at 8 o'clock?
Good question. It's actually because I want to, when that bell goes at 5 to 9, I want to feel ready. I want to feel absolutely ready. And I sometimes feel that if I get there, say, at 8:30, I'm still well within my rights to do that. But if I turn at 8:30, I might only have 10 minutes before I have a parent knocking on my door, or a teacher wants to just come over and have a chat about something, and all of a sudden it's, you know, 5 to 9 and I haven't got anything sort of ready to go. And some people might argue, well, LaVars, you know, do it before you go home at night. Some nights you can't do that. Some nights you're too tired. You go, you know what, stuff this, I just want to go home, you know. So the reasons were kind of, I want to get everything ready, but also they're that unwritten law. I kind of feel bad. I don't know about you, but I kind of feel bad. If I'm there a little bit late, I actually come in, you know, feeling a bit bad. And I'll even say to my colleague, oh, sorry, I'm running a bit late. And they'll look at you and go, I don't care, you know, yeah.
After almost 10 years in the profession, I still hate that feeling at 5 to 9. If you've been swamped that morning and you might have had a parent come in that wasn't planned, and that's okay. I still, after nearly 10 years, it kind of stresses me out. So like you, I aimed, for most of my career, I always arrive at 8 o'clock most mornings. Like you said, unless there's something else. And that is purely, like you said, for planning purposes, just to get your head around the day. So by the time 10 to 9 arrives, you're kind of feeling really like, ready to go, and you've almost got a moment to take a deep breath before the kids walk in. But I tend to have I give myself little rewards during the week. So maybe on a Friday I might not arrive till a little bit after 8 or 8:30. But having said that, I've actually changed my routine a bit to not be so regiment all mornings. If something, like you said with your daughter, if something comes up, then or I'm just enjoying my morning, I might just stay a little bit longer. And I do get up early because I like sitting and having breakfast, checking the news, talking to my wife, all that sort of stuff. Because I think that, again, life will pass us by, and you think, well, I don't have much, you know, I don't have much to go by to look back on if I'm always arriving at 8.
Absolutely. Do you think there's too much pressure on the modern teacher today to get there early? Because I can't see any school saying to their teachers, no, guys, look, come at 8:30 and do these sorts of things and take that time. I mean, I know that I've spoken to other teachers at other schools where they're implicitly told, well, no, you've got to do all this work, you know, outside that teaching time. You know, well, you're just going to have to do it. And they're forced to get there early when, like you said, life's more important there. You know, life doesn't want to pass you by, but no one's encouraged. Everyone's encouraged to get there early.
I think if a teacher is arriving at 8:45 every morning, there might, every morning without fail, there might be a bit of an issue.
Yes.
But I think outside that time, I think teachers should be able to arrive, unless there's something in a contract, which I can't really do, at the time they want, as long as they're prepared.
That's right. Should they get into trouble for turning up at 8:45, though, really? I mean, if we're paid from now this could be a touchy subject.
Well, I don't know, but I don't think so. Yeah. But
I mean, if their school day finished at 3:30 and they were there till 5 every night, preparing, doing that stuff, so they could turn up at 8:45, ready to go. Can they actually do that with all the teams and the way things teach? Can you get away with it? Could you get away with it?
Maybe, but there's no hard. There can't be a hard and fast rule for which is slightly different for everyone. Or there can't be a hard and fast rule maybe for everyone about you must arrive at this time. Principals, I don't think, can really enforce.
No, they can't.
It'll be interesting to see whether for you and I, whether in the after we've done this topic, whether in the future there will be discussions about when people should arrive. Because sometimes you hear comments from people on staff about, oh, so-and-so has arrived at this time every day. Or it was interesting. I went back to a book that you and I touched on in past episodes, I think late last year.
Yes.
Which was about, it was called Busy by Tony Crabb, How to Thrive in a World of Too Much. And I was flicking through it in the lead up to this topic. And there's a chapter that he talks about managing your boundaries. And there was a little section called Quid Pro Quo. And he says that He's talking about what he calls the psychological contract, which is a contract between the employee and the employer. I think he's come up with it himself, and I'm going to quote him here. The psychological contract describes the primarily unwritten deal between any individual and their employer. It goes way beyond the basic transaction of a certain wage for a certain number of hours to encompass all the elements of the implicit trade we make with our organisations. Now, he's got a diagram on the other page that he kind of says that the psychological contract has, for me as a worker, it's what I offer and what the and what I want in my job, and as well as what the organisation wants and what the organisation offers. Now, the reason why I've brought this up is I think the psychological contract is almost this unwritten thing that leads back to what you just said, is that there is kind of this expectation that all teachers should be in there as early as they can.
Yep.
And if you're leaving slightly earlier on some days, sometimes you just feel little looks. Okay. And like you said, teachers feel guilty. I've worked with staff who'll go, do you think someone's going to say anything if I go for my doctor's appointment straight after school on a Thursday. It's like, no, they shouldn't. No. But people feel like they've got to explain this because there is this, I think, this psychological contract.
And I think it's harder for teachers too, because if you need to go to something early, what are you walking out in amongst of? You're walking in amongst all these parents as well who are looking at you going, oh, you're leaving early, when you kind of go, well, of course I am. I've got things to do.
Yeah. It's perceived as well, though.
It is. Look, what I want to finish off with too is I thought what you brought up before about giving yourself a little reward is something I think teachers need to do more often. And I do the same thing. Monday is my day. I have planning hour to myself in the last hour where I, at lunchtime, I'll go and sit in my office and eat my lunch and do that. Do a lot of planning where I aim to be out by 4. We finish at 3:30. I want to be going home at 4 because I've had that 2.5 hour block to do some stuff and reward myself by going home early. There's no meetings, so I can spend time with my family and do these sorts of things as well. And I think we need to encourage other teachers to do the same. Negotiate your life back, as you said before, and take the opportunity to look after yourself.
Yeah, absolutely, Adam. I completely agree. So we'd love to hear your opinions on the times you get to school and what you think about this issue. Second topic tonight, Adam, is about absences in school. We mark, that's a thing of primary schools and secondary schools, we mark the roll every morning. And there was an article in The Age on Saturday just gone about absenteeism in primary schools. The headline was primary school kids missing years of schooling. So adding up all their absences over a period of time, they're missing years apparently. Now, a lot of the focus of the article comes from low socioeconomic schools where dropout can be quite serious. Fascinating that the average number of days absent in Victorian primary schools is 14, which is quite a lot, considering that's taking into account, I guess, absences across all students, not just students that may have a difficult home life. You and I have kind of worked in, you could say, fairly well-balanced, affluent sort of areas, where a lot of the absences sometimes come for family holidays.
Yes.
And I've had some students take family holidays this year. And I understand families taking holidays during the school term because prices can be cheaper at some destinations and things. And also it probably works in better with maybe their parents, the students' parents' work, because that they aren't teachers. I can really understand that. So what are your thoughts on, I guess, those numbers, 14? Like, is that a concern in your eyes?
Well, mate, I think you nailed it very early on when you talked about the days the students take holidays during school time. I think a lot of families do that now, which bumps up the numbers. And I know that the department, I know that a lot of schools, I don't know about you guys, but when they do the school review and things like that, one of the goals in the strategic plan is always to bring absenteeism down. Well, our average is 11, for example. We want to get it down, you know, into single digits and things. And everyone kind of talks about it and nods. And then the next one comes around and it's our absenteeism is at 11 still and we want to bring it down. But if families...
schools can be audited too on the documentation that supports absences. So you've got to have that documentation, like a letter from the parents.
Yes.
Which I can really understand that can be a problem.
Me too.
Some families just do not send those letters in. You ask for them, have you got a note for last week? You don't know.
Well, I demand it. I actually will write something in the diary or say, that student will come to me and say, next week I'm going to... I had one this week actually on Monday say, we're going to Queensland next week. And I said, well, can you get mum to write me a note?
Yes, but some of them still don't.
True. Yeah, don't. Mine must be pretty good because I don't think I've got to chase any, but yeah, you're right, they get ordered. And where our school is really harsh, like really harsh on making sure that every absence is documented.
Oh, so is
and,
so,
yeah,
so
yeah.
Is
and
mine.
I'm saying yours, but yeah, you do have to chase them up. But that number there, 14, would scare some people. They go, oh, 14, oh, that's, you know, that's almost of school weeks, that's almost 3 weeks, you know, 5 days in the school week. But that's probably bumped up by at least, you know, 20-30% due to those school holidays.
There's a principal in the article, Kevin Pope from Meadow Heights Primary School, who says that now they're a low socioeconomic school, but he says that some kids at his school missed about 40 days a year. Now, that's enormous. We're not talking about that. But my radar, my absence radar as a teacher with my students kind of turns on maybe after the third absence in a row from a student. I think, okay, 3 days. And even if they have got like a really nasty bug or something, I might check in with the parent by like the following day or maybe on that third day. I guess if those blocks of 3 days are happening a lot, then it's a different kind of conversation that you have, and you might get some support from leadership there. But strings of absences can become a problem for those students that are just on the periphery of maybe losing their way with their learning.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to throw it to you as well. Do you think in today's day and age in the classroom... So let me ask you the question too, Rick. In today's day and age, do you think students are less resilient and therefore able to con, I guess, their parents into taking days off? I know that I've had that over the last few years, and particularly even earlier as well. But kids that will have a day off for their birthday. We don't get long weekends for Melbourne Cup, but I've had students just miss those extra couple of days just because Dad has two, so they end up staying home, or, oh, I was feeling a bit sick, and then, but you hear, you know, that Monday one, but then you hear the kids say, but they were at the party the day before that we just had. Do you think there's not enough resiliency? Not enough parents are going, now, come on, they lift your game a bit and get to school.
I don't think we'll ever really know. We can't really know what kind of conversations are going on for obvious reasons behind the four walls of a home. But I think that some students give it away to us a little bit sometimes. Mm. Some kids will openly say, I'm having a day off for my birthday. Mm. Whereas I don't think some parents would want us to know that reason, but the kids are just honest. But I don't think we'll ever really know. But I think you can probably make judgments on the characters of some students on and the relationships they have with their parents. But my sort of, my answer to that is I'm not sure. I think some maybe do, but I actually think maybe with the generation of parents and students we've got these days, I actually think maybe there'd be less of that conning parents. Mm. I think there'd be more of just parent decisions perhaps being made.
I agree. And I also think it comes back to the school. There's an onus on the school to create a really positive learning environment. And I think if a school is creating that and it's safe and it's friendly and enjoyable, then the students are more often than not obviously going to want to come to school. They're not going to want to take that day off. They're not going to want to stay home and things. They're going to go, no. And I've had a lot of kids. I've had parents say, well, I write a note in the diary. He's coughing all day. He's been coughing all night, but he wants to come to school. He doesn't want to stay home. And
particularly if you get, because it's project, you know, you're presenting projects day or something like that. And I love hearing those stories. Yes. And if that's happening to you, that's great, and that's happened to me. So that goes to show that something in our classrooms at times are working really well.
That's right, and that's not a pat on the back. It's more, it's kind of throwing it out there to say that schools should be looking at themselves and going, no, we need to create an environment where the school, where the children want to be here, and that will, you know, bring down that absenteeism as far as it's going to go. You're never going to solve it. Mm. You're never going to go, well, we're sitting here for a strategic plan and we've got no absences. You know, it's always going to happen, but if you create the right environment, that it will stay at a level that it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, we'd love to hear, because we've got a variety of listeners, what's sort of the absence sort of, I guess, level like at your school.
So, Rick, give me a high five, mate. I need a high five. On the last week, the laptop agreement was finally solved, mate. We talked about this one a long time ago, actually, and I think you and I thought that it would actually be solved sooner.
Well, we've been tracking it, haven't we? Tracking the Australian Education Union's court case. Mm. The federal court case with the department, haven't we?
We have. And look, finally, and we've had a win. Rightly so, I might add. This is only going to be a short topic, but we just wanted to kind of almost celebrate for teachers that it's a win for us, because the education department's always said that we've had unlimited use of these laptops. Well, they can go and use them at home and all these things. But I'm sorry, these were given to us with the idea that we do our reports on them, we're expected to be tech savvy, we're expected to be all these things, but you have to pay for it. Yeah, it's ridiculous, and it's always been ridiculous.
So for those people listening maybe outside the state, on Friday the federal court ruled officially that the education department in Victoria unlawfully forced teachers to lease their laptops under the Notebooks for Teachers and Principals program. So I think it's on November 25th, Adam, there will be Justice Bromberg is going to outline the final decision.
Brommy, what a man, hey, come through for us.
there is a chance that some of the back... I mean, part of the case was that teachers be back paid what they have contributed in terms of these laptops. So I imagine that we won't get all that. That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
But it is, the department looks like it may be repaying millions back. Look, it was a case that I underneath had some doubts, but it is deserved, as you said. Look, the department, we have said this before, but the department was arguing that teachers have a choice of whether they use their work laptops for... It's an unlimited choice to use it for personal reasons. But again, it's something that we've been told that we have to have. We've talked about the software that has to go on there before. So I don't know about you, Adam, but I'm really, really looking forward to that coming through. And by this time next year, we won't be paying for our work laptops.
And rightly so. And I just want to add, too, that, I mean, a lot of us have been doing this since 2009. So that's, you know... What, 6 years? Is that 6 years or even 7 years?
Well, I've been doing it since 2006, I believe.
Really? Because it's got here. It just had there that from July 2009 to November 2013, the government deducted up to, you know, made $20 million. So are they only talking about that?
I recall getting my laptop at the beginning of early 2006, and I'm sure that there was money coming out before then. Perhaps it was from July 2009 where it went up to 17, because it says it deducted up to $17 a fortnight. We'll have to get that checked. Someone might know that for us.
That's for the Apple laptops too. Can I play devil's advocate for a second with this too? With this, with the win and them having to pay it back, what do you think the education department's going to do in terms of what they now offer for staff around Victoria, in the sense that, well, now that we're not paying for it and they're not getting money back for it, are we now going to, is it going to take longer for us to get an updated laptop, and will it be worse? Will they start going, well, we're just going to get the lowest common denominator that we can afford, and that's what you're going to get, and it's going to be a big pile of junk?
Well, it is going to cost a lot. I mean, I granted, I understand that, and I'm not good with numbers in terms of what the department would have in that kind of kitty, but you'd like to think that there'd be some parameters put in place to the kind of next agreement that would stop that from happening, because it needs to be a good functioning machine, doesn't it? That we have for about 3 years. So I'd like to think that just doesn't happen, Adam, but the almost some goodwill would come into it there. But that's probably...
You'd hope so, but if they're flossed this one... But imagine getting a crummy laptop and you get halfway through your reports and something stuffs up and you've lost them all. And I mean, it only takes one of those.
It's not good enough. It wouldn't be good enough.
No, it's not good enough. But we don't want to go on this one for too long. But we just wanted to say that I think it's fantastic that it's a win, and that we might see a couple of $100 come back in a bit of back pay. But it's also good for us that we shouldn't have to pay something for something that's such an integral part of teaching. And we hope that... we don't have to do that again in the future.
And just finally, I feel like the AAU needed some good news. It's been a fairly quietish year, but I kind of feel like they needed that. And it's got me galvanised again. So well done, AAU.
That's right. So at home tonight, we want you to crack a beer, open up a wine, or drink a can of Coke in celebration.
Okay, Adam, it's your anecdote time. Over to you.
A bit nervous, I must admit. 2 weeks ago, I don't know if anyone jumped on the blog and saw some of those reports. That was an absolute gem a fortnight ago about the ceramic pig. That was a ripper, mate. Can I just say that again?
Well, thank you. There was even more, Adam, but we might say that for another time.
I might actually have to find mine. We could do a bit of Maybe we could dedicate a whole podcast to our crummy reports.
Get some guests in with their crummy reports.
Yeah, that'd be really good. But what I want to talk about is, obviously, yesterday we had Remembrance Day. And I know for you particularly, I know we talked about that at the top of the show, that Anzac Day has an extra importance for you, and you really enjoy that day, and you go down with your dad and to the dawn service and do all that sort of stuff. I know for me that while I really appreciate the history of it, and it is important to me, I obviously didn't have that sort of connection as well. But what I want to talk about is some of those important days at school where the expectation is that kids and staff do things, you know, straight down the line. It's very serious, and it doesn't go seriously. And it really jogged my memory of, and I want to share this story with you, and I actually think you won't be able to believe it, but going back, I'm not going to say what year or anything like that, we set ourselves up in the main area for Remembrance Day. This was a Remembrance Day one. You know when you have those days, and say it's on a day where there's planning, those people, you know, going off, they're doing their planning, there's a couple of people doing their planning, and...
Teachers, you mean?
The teachers were doing their planning, and so the kids that were at PE and at all those things... Those teachers, so the PE teacher things, brought the kids in and took part in the service. You know,
that happened at ours yesterday.
Yeah. So there you go. So they're all standing in there, and this is the main communal area where the teachers can come in and do things as well. So all the kids are standing there, and we're doing the Remembrance Day stuff. So we've said the words and what's up. And you stood the kids up. Now, the minute silence is the toughest one for me. The minute silence, really getting across the kids that this is silence. This is not shuffling. It's not budging each other and giggling.
Well,
it's
particularly for the really young students.
For the really young students, it's really hard. So you're getting them up. We are literally just ready to go for the minute silence. Right, ready to go? The principal said, so you're ready to go, and we're about to begin. The photocopier goes off with someone sending printing down, who is planning, to the photocopier right as we start the 1 minute silence.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine that? So you're standing there with the kids, and here's over the side. Everyone looks over, and you just think to yourself, What is this person doing?
I mean, I'm giggling. I don't want to be disrespectful.
No,
but, and we're not. But because that would be, I'd be flabbergasted. Yeah.
Wouldn't you think that if you were doing your plan, then that it's the time was? I think it was.
Can I ask how many photocopiers they had to choose from, Adam, in the school?
One. That was it. That was the only one. There's only one.
Oh,
so you think to yourself, you know, I'll just leave it. Whatever I got to print, I'll just leave it open and do it when I can see the kids coming back. Because clearly that's going to be important. Where we've got the wreaths, we've got all these things there. Literally, it was, and we're almost ready. And you can sort of look, and everyone looked over, and you just went utterly ridiculous.
Oh, mate, that is. And was it able to? Did it stop? How many sheets?
Thankfully, there was only a couple of sheets.
Because the problem would have been if it was something like, you know, printing a bunch of pre-tests or something, and it was something like 80 to 100 sheets.
Yeah.
You know how photocopies can get into that rhythm.
And yes.
I've worked with colleagues who've just printed so much, and you can hear the rhythm, and after a while, you can start actually playing drums to it. You know,
Yeah, you know it. You know what's going to be coming out, don't you? Have you had something like that happen with you at school before or anything like that where there's a seriousness to it, and someone just hasn't met that expectation?
No, not I can't recall anything as a teacher. I can certainly remember times when I was a student. I can remember standing, of all places, in woodwork, and it would have been about year nine, you know, that great year, year nine, and you'd stand to attention, and wood shavings everywhere, you know, you've got dust all over yourself. I can remember this specifically in the last post playing through the tiny little PA speaker in the room. And this is really bad, but I remember a student decided to break wind during that time. Terrible. So, yeah, I mean, I look back on that now badly because I remember laughing, but, like, it's so disrespectful.
Yeah,
at the time, you are still, I don't know what else to say.
And that's spot on, because my other story was grade five, when we were standing there and the minute silence began, and I was standing there amongst
my
mates.
Is this you as a year five student?
This is me as a year five student, and standing in amongst the mates, and then all of a sudden hearing this, well, that sort of stuff, and then everyone having to try and sort of stand there and kind of, you know, keep a straight face and not actually say anything. Awful. And the kid kind of looking around as if to say, Jimmy Farr, like, as if to say they wanted a pat
and
on the back.
What I believe about that now. At that age, and I'm thinking about the students we teach now, I can't accept that. I find it hard at that age that they, disrespectful, isn't it? You know, but
it is, because they know they can hold that in.
Yeah,
30 seconds, surely.
Absolutely.
You know,
there's, I think we've discovered probably two or more different topics in that for future podcasts, Adam. Great anecdote.
No, thanks, mate. And look, I just want to hear from people about, and not so much just Remembrance Day and Anzac Day, but even an important day on the school calendar where you know there is a seriousness involved in it. Just a kid or a teacher or someone just not assessing the situation well enough and making a bit of a fool of themselves. So if you have a story like that, we'd love to hear you on Facebook or Twitter. So, mate, that brings an end to episode 45. And again, great to be back in the chair. And we do have a bit of a goal before Christmas that we probably have 5 more episodes to go to 50 episodes, and we'd love to reach that mark by Christmas.
It'll be great to reach that mark by Christmas, Adam. And so we hope to string some episodes together between now and the end of the year. For us Victorian teachers, it's week 6. It's an 11-week term, so we're confident we can reach that milestone, Adam.
Yes, unless one of us dies, I think we'll be right.
And we are open to we are open to people. We've got a couple of ideas for our final episode in the final week of term. It's a very busy week, that final week, for both of us. But we're on the lookout for guests. If you've got any time during our recording phase, get in touch with us. You could jump on Skype with us. That would be great.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think people realise that they don't have to be here in the, what I would deem in quote marks, the studio.
Yes.
They don't have to be here for that. We can actually Skype really well with you. And if you actually would really love to be on it and have some really good ideas, we would love to hear from you and get you on, because the more guests, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. So please get in touch with us if you are interested.
Yeah. So from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Ricardo Thompson, and we've both been Two Regular Teachers.